Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Chris enjoying a cup of coffee mid-afternoon on a gorgeous Thursday afternoon. Personal branding is the topic today, and we're continuing from the first audio on this. This is part two. So where we got up to before was talking about authenticity, that we really need to know ourselves before we even think about our personal branding. What comes through in personal branding are our core values, but we can direct it in any area we want, whether it's being a thug, a sports individual, prefect of a high school, engineer, uni student. Personal branding is how we project ourselves and identify ourselves and how the world sees us. And it needs to have some level of authenticity. And the authenticity that we talked about was knowing yourself, your core values. And you can dress yourself, but if those core values are missing from your personal branding, then it will be unsustainable. So we're going to go on now. And we finished off saying in the first video that first audio, that a vision board is really critical to personal branding. But before you do your vision board, it's really wise to get your values sorted out. So let's keep going. I would say in my life, the thing that's made the most impact on my personal branding has been my family life. It has not been my professional life. Now that sounds really weird, but let's start with my upbringing. In the bush, in Mildura, down to earth, physical violence from my stepmother and a little bit from my dad, a sort of a very physicalized existence. And so my core values are quite anti-violent. And so as much as I might decorate myself in warrior uniform from time to time, my core value through the middle of that has to be that so I can walk my talk, has to be a sense of non-violence in the world. Now, that's not easy, because when you run a business as an entrepreneur, which I've done since I was 14 years old, I've run businesses from all shapes and sizes, from car dealing to car cleaning, from engineering to global enterprises, all the way to the current business that I run with Inner Wealth and coaching executives. All of those identities along the way are influenced strongly by my personal life and by my upbringing. And so our core values do reflect a bit of, typically reflect the starting time of our life, but how we express those values adapts to the environment that we create. And as I mentioned earlier in the earlier audio, when I was an engineer's assistant and I met this young lady and she put my applications into uni and I got in, surprise, surprise, as a failed high school student. And I started studying and I met my first wife, and I met her family who were in the banking world, and I was, you know, cleaning up bricks from construction sites and living in a derelict house and surfing every weekend. I had head under my shoulders and was walking against the Vietnam War up and down the streets. We merged, she and I, into a home, and immediately the way I presented myself to the world morphed. Suddenly at uni, I was dressed a bit better. I used to go to uni in overalls because I had work to do after class on a building site. That was my business. And then suddenly I started dressing a little bit better. It wasn't deliberate, but it was, in a sense, it was just an adaptation to my personal life. And soon I started thinking about what I was wearing, whereas before that I really didn't. I just dressed for comfort or dressed for the event that I was doing. And that means that I was trying to portray a more of a collaborated, married, happily togethered unit with my partner, and she was very attractive, and I certainly wanted to make her feel that she was with the right guy. So even the quality of my wetsuits for scuba diving and the surfboard that I used and my ocean kayaks and the river kayaks that we built everything started to become a much more sophisticated, much more thought through. The people we hung out with as friends also were more people who had expertise in particular areas of life. One was a very accomplished scuba diver at the age of 20. One was a real estate mogul at the age of 20, and another one raced motorbikes at the age of 20. So we started to hang out with people who in their own sphere, whether deliberately or by accident, branded themselves really importantly. They had sponsors and they had to represent a brand and they had to stand up for something in an era where that wasn't quite so common. And so it became important for me to develop this brand. And this brand I created was the environmentalist. I was with my long hair still and with my a little bit rough and tumble approach, I was anti the establishment in the sense of the establishment that was abusing the land and abusing the environment and abusing the people who own the land. And so I got to stand up against. And this is really important part of my journey in life is that I found this militant passive militant person who wanted to fight for something without fighting against the people who were doing wrong. And this was a really important era of flower power and wanting to bring love into the world and also wanting to create a beautiful environment. And I sustained that all through that marriage. Now, that marriage lasted, remember, I was 19, it lasted 13 years, three kids, multiple disruptions to the marriage. I rode to the level of Olympic champion. I rode to I built a business in all that 13 years. I made tens of millions of dollars. We traveled all over the world. I built a business out of Germany in relation to Germany. I traveled throughout the world with another firm doing work in Asia. Throughout that, this brand that I developed as a protagonist with nonviolence, who was seeking to sort of flower power, seeking to share the love, wanting to create the world an environment that was better for the small people. And it was ironic that I would end up working in Asia in compounds where the greatest wealth in the compound was the biggest bowl of rice, working for big giant paper making firms who were ripping the guts out of forests. And my job was going in to try and talk them out of it and use rice straw instead of all raw pulp from old growth forest. So the company that I worked with in Germany was the world's leading high-tech environmental air pollution control firm, and I owned their license in Australia and built that business. And all through this, the rough and tumble part of me from my childhood was instrumental in my success, because air pollution is a very etheric type thing. It's out there, you can't see it, especially hygienic air pollution, which is in a room where, like, for example, when they make tea bags, where they open the big boxes of tea from India, the dust that comes off that is invisible, but it's carcinogenic. I work in a cement plant where the dust that comes off is visible, but if you take the very, very fine particles, again, it's carcinogenic. So you're talking about smoke. You're talking about things people can't see that can kill you. And so my upbringing in my early life in Mildura, the dealing with the earth and being raw and working with Aboriginal people and playing with them and being able to relate to the grassroots was core to my personal brand. Now, I wore brown suits with pens in the pocket. So this is how real I was as an engineer. But again, I outgrew the environment. One day, as this still inhabiting this militant self, I was in Germany and I was lent a car, and I took all the staff of this engineering group that I worked with, 10-pin bowling, and I bought in Australian beer to thank them for all the work they did, and then drove half a dozen people home inside a Golf up the footpath. And the owner of the company, Mr. Margraff, found out about it, and the car was taken away, but I sort of lost my face. And that was the beginning of a very strained relationship with them. And so my personal brand, authentic as it was, the honest and raw, and I loved working with air pollution control systems and working with engineering. My personal brand was a little confronted in comparison to the very stoic and very clean lines of the German way of doing things. And they lost a little bit of trust for me, and I lost a little bit of interest in them. And for 3 more years, we worked really powerfully together. They even sent out an engineer to work in Australia with me for a year at my cost, just to make sure I towed the line. And so you can see when your personal brand, you can't fake it in a way. So it needs to encompass the breadth of the whole breadth of who you really are. So I believe you need to incorporate family values and relationships in the concept of building a brand that's authentic. I think you can't, if your home life is really disrupted and you're living with people who are angry or disinterested in you, that is going to make its way to the surface in your work. And so we need to either create a domestic environment that is conducive to the brand we're trying to present to the world, or we change the brand we're trying to present in the world to reflect the environment at home. And this topic is really, really intense. I would say it's the most intense piece of work you do in personal branding, to say what happens at home, and are you passive or aggressive at home? Are you the patriarch or matriarch of the family? Are you in conflict with your partner? Are you in love? Are you getting on? Is it stressful? Is it not stressful? And that is going to be part of your brand. You can't just compartmentalize it. It's not like we're there for a week. We're there for the very long haul. So to take it into a deeper place, every human has every human trait. So what we're doing in personal branding is showcasing the various aspects of ourselves. So we show, if everybody has every trait, if we all displayed every trait, we'd all have identical brands. So what we do is we showcase various aspects of our identity. We pull out that, oh, I'm really good at kindness. I like that part of me. I know I'm the opposite sometimes, but I'm going to pull that piece of me out and demonstrate it as part of my personal brand. And so it's really important to see that's the essence of marketing. It's really important to see that marketing takes something that has a balance of good and bad in it, but demonstrates the good. Mental health is knowing that there's good and bad in everything, but focusing on the positive. And this is really important part of personal branding, is not to get caught up believing your own, drinking your own Kool-Aid. You don't get caught up thinking that this brand you're creating is a polarity brand. It is called personal branding because it's marketing to the world the piece of yourself, the identity in yourself that you want people to meet. It doesn't say the other half doesn't exist. It's just focusing attention on the pieces that you want people to meet. Now, that's a really important element, because if we start building a personal brand, which is half ourselves, we say, look at me, I'm kind, I'm good, I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm wise, I'm smart, I'm really clever, then where's the other half go? It either goes into self-abuse, in other words, we start condemning ourselves for not being true to our personal brand, or we express it in our home life. Now, getting this piece of the puzzle correct is probably the most important thing you'll ever do in your life. If you say to the world, look how kind I am, and you don't like the part of you that's cruel, it's either going to be there and you're going to condemn yourself for it, as a Catholic would, or someone who is very much brought up in the Ten Commandments, you're going to start abusing yourself for being bad, or you're going to express it at home, and you're going to express it to the people that don't be seen in public, or you will follow the principle that says what you judge in yourself, you breed it in your children, attract it in a partner, or become it in yourself. Now, it's very, very important when you're doing personal branding to express parts of your identity you want the world to see. That's very important. And you wouldn't express your angry self if you wanted to be liked. So you'd express your likable self. But where does the unlikable part go? Where does the dark side of you go? Where is the sad side? Where is the depressed side? Where is the frustrated side? Where does that go to find home? If you express it at home, you'll pollute your home life. If you hold it in, you'll pollute your internal life and get sick. So the only solution about the dark side of ourselves, if we're expressing one in our brand, the only solution to owning the dark side is to love it. And that's a story of another day. So I think role models shape our branding efforts hugely. And we are often limited by our partner in life because our partner might not... I remember really clearly I dated a lady who was a fashion designer, very big time fashion designer, global level fashion designer, and she had a brand. And we would go to product launches of Gucci, product launches of Vogue, and we would go, and I would be standing beside her recognizing that I was not in the bracket. I was punching way above my weight. Even the way I dressed, although I had Armani clothes on and I had a beautiful haircut and I was handsome and I was standing beside her, I just felt out of place. It was not just physical displacement, but I was just not used to talking to, bumping into and shaking hands with the Prime Minister or Elton John or Mick Jagger or someone at a function. And she moved through it all silky smooth. So her self-belief and self-respect was way, way, way down the track to where I was in that particular era of my life. It also expressed itself when my next partner was not necessarily a flamboyant dresser like this person, but she was a really sculpted corporate branding expert. And so she presented herself really casually, but incredibly sophisticatedly. So she wore Prada clothes. She is incredibly aware of the power of presence. But she was bumping into Donald Trump and saying hi. She was bumping into this person and that person and saying hi. And I'm walking along beside her carrying my briefcase going, I am so far out of Mildura. I am so far out of the bush here. And so it grew me. And although I was wearing also, at her instruction, Prada and Gucci and all these clothes so I fitted in. And I was part of the presentation we did in all sorts of parts of the world, Qatar and all over. And in Singapore to Richard Branson, I always felt like I was tagging along behind her. And so my personal branding in those instances, what it demonstrates is who I really am, effect. Even if I can disguise and show up part of my identity, my self-respect and self-worth was lagging. And so my personal brand narrative wasn't good enough for those situations, but it became good enough through those situations. So I always worked hard with whoever I was living with or going out with to eventually feel comfortable in the zone of discomfort that they introduced me to where they were comfortable. And that happened in, I met Carlos Santana at a straight off stage. As he came straight off the stage in Sydney, he went into the green, into a very private personal room with myself and my then partner in life, and we had a three-way conversation in there. And he's talking like at 100 mile an hour about how he'd love to have sex with all the people in the stage, and he loved this music, and he's going on like this, and I'm sitting there like in awe of this bloke. And Again, it those situations are opportunities to improve your personal brand, to improve your belief, so that what you wear and what you look and what you say and the business you're building is authenticated by the person you believe you are that's right behind it. So it includes, the most important thing I'm saying here is your personal brand is either built or sabotaged by family influences. And in the case of me building my business and the influence of the people that I've shared my life with and being able to change that, because I, with my first marriage finished and my children not in my area, I could be and date and live with and share life with anybody I choose and anybody who chose me. And that was always growing me into a branding exercise. And there's no way I could have become a professional speaker in Canada and the US and written a book without the influence of all these people who lifted me, who took me to places they were comfortable with that were completely foreign to me. But by the time we were together for a period, I felt totally comfortable at a Vogue champagne event, eating small things that usually, when I first went, when I'd eat the little, what do I call those things, the little biscuity things, when they pass them on the tray, when I ate an hors d'oeuvre, half of it, I would bite into it and therefore lose half of it down my chin. And then by the time I left, we broke up and finished, I was comfortable shoving the whole thing in my mouth so I didn't make a mess of it. So personal family life affects your personal brand. And sometimes it's a limit because your partner is still tying up their boots, button-up boots, or your partner has not worked for a while and their highest level of branding is the fake that they can put on in social media or at a social function, but who they are at home is stuck, and that makes it hard because then you've got to be one person at home, morph into another one on the way to work, and I honestly haven't seen that ever in a sustainable way work. So I think it's really important to integrate family stories and experiences in your branding strategies. I think it's really important to talk about the history of your life and mum and dad and siblings and how it's gone tough and how it's gone good, because all of that is the formula that goes in the soup that makes you real. And I think for me, when it comes to branding, it's absolutely essential. Branding is storytelling. It's a narrative. And therefore, this piece of our work is to enlarge ourselves or in make ourselves comfortable being at the level that we say we aspire to in life. If you say, I want to change the world and make the world a better place, do you feel worthy of that? Do you feel capable of that? And if you went to the United Nations and stood in front of 20,000 people who had billions of dollars to put into making the world a better place, could you do a talk? And could you tell stories of your own life that made you feel like you were the right person for them to give that money to make it distribute? You got to walk your talk. And I think it's really important, or limp your life. It's really important to morph continually through this back end of storytelling, narrative, self-awareness, becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable, learning about being comfortable in different environments, building things up, continually growing, continually expanding the narrative so that the brand that you represent, the brand identity that you present, can be authentic, can be legitimate, and can recruit the energy and the attraction and do good in the world so it actually authenticates itself in its own right. That's enough for today. We'll do more of this later on. If there's any comments, please send them. If you like it, please like it. If you put a thumbs up or whatever they do on wherever you're listening, and if necessary, and if you'd love to, share it. Bye for now.